Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Welcome to episode 83 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, and a special welcome to all my Inner Circle members. Thanks for tuning in today, wherever you are in the world. My name is Tim Topham, and I'm the teacher behind the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where you can get weekly inspiration, ideas, and actionable teaching strategies to help you provide the richest, most exciting, and fun learning experiences for your piano students. Today's show notes and a full transcript, as usual, are available at timtopham.com/episode83. So today's episode is all about exam syllabuses or syllabi, depending on what you like to say, and the best ways of choosing them and which ones are best. So we're going to dive into that. But I did want to tell you straight up that I've got a special freebie for you today, and it's my one-page exam preparation checklist. So if you're sending students for exams, this is one of those sheets that you can use just to remind yourself as you go through and as you start preparing students of the things that you should be making sure that you cover. So I talk in there about helping students understand the reality of exams, what it will feel like, what to do while they're waiting, what to do if they make mistakes, the importance of focus, ideas around running mock exams and recitals, and all those kinds of things that we should be doing for a comprehensive preparation schedule for a student doing an exam. If you'd like to grab a copy of that, you can find that also at the show notes page, timtopham.com/episode83. So today's episode is titled, What's the Best Piano Exam Syllabus? And it's a bit of an odd question in many ways, because the question isn't really about what the best syllabus is. The first question we need to ask ourselves is, what's the best way of assessing my piano student's progress? Because ultimately, that's what an exam does. And to do that, we first need to know what our students' goals are. What are we trying to achieve for our student, and where do they want to go, and where do we want to help them get to? Now, before we get and have a look at goals, I just want to talk about assessment methods, because the first question I ask is, what's the best way of assessing student progress? Now, there is no doubt that exams are an excellent motivator for students. They provide structure for teaching and for the student, and they will get students practicing, in most cases, more than they will do for just about any other reason. So there's no doubt that used in the right way, they can be a driving force of motivation. But what I want you to think about is whether there are other alternatives as well that might suit your student and their goals better. So for example, recitals and performances, including pop recitals, particularly for those who are doing more contemporary music, can be a great way of assessing student progress and giving students a goal to work towards. I think if there was any other assessment form that I've seen students get motivated to practice towards, it's a live performance where they're going to be getting up in front of people and showing what they can do and hopefully telling a beautiful musical story in the process. There is no doubt that that has a big effect on students' motivation and practice. So recitals and performances can be another option for assessing student progress. What's another one? Well, another one could be recording either audio or videos and the creation of albums or playlists of students' work. Many times in the past, professional recording artists would have set and had a goal of recording an album of some sort. And so this is something that we could give our students the opportunity to do as an assessment means. We could record something and create an audio file that we could send to grandparents or upload to a website of some sort, or we could create videos of the student performing on YouTube. And I found that if a student knows that something is going to go on YouTube, they will do a lot of practice to make sure that it's up to scratch, just like they would for a live performance, and sometimes even more. So we've got two ideas so far. We've got exams, and then we've got recitals. three ideas, exams, recitals, and we've got the idea of recording videos or audio files of the student playing. And there's one other option for assessment, and that's competitions and festivals and Stedfords and things of that nature. A chance for students to get up and perform. So it's very similar to performing live, but with a competitive or a marked focus. And so that could be another way that students could be assessed. And I know that in the United States, where exams aren't as strong a focus as they are in the UK and Australia, competitions and festivals tend to be quite a popular way for student assessment to occur. So that's the first thing that I'd like you to always consider when you're thinking about exams. Ask yourself, what's actually the best way to assess my students' progress? And if it's an exam, fantastic. But keep in mind that there are some other ways of doing it, and they're the ones that we've just talked through. And in fact, you might even be able to come up with some other ones of your own, whether it's for a younger student creating some kind of interactive project or a scrapbook of music, or having students write out their music or create a written score that they could upload to Sheet Music Plus. Whatever it is, there are many ways that we can form long-term goals for students that will also assess their progress. When it comes to preparation for exams, I do want to mention one thing, and that's the cramming effect. And I'm sure many of you will have experienced this. So this is where a student who has an upcoming exam or recital or whatever it is suddenly starts to put in a massive amount of work and practice in the 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, sometimes even less time. The problem is, of course, that cramming, while it can give you short-term results, and many of us, myself included, have crammed to some extent for exams and perhaps done quite well. The problem is that cramming doesn't work for memory retention over time, because the way that we learn best is actually by giving our brains a chance to forget. Now, I know that sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but bear with me. When we learn something, so let's say we're having a practice session, we've just taught ourselves how to do something different. It's the fact that we then have a break. Maybe we go to sleep and we come back the next day, or maybe we just have a break and come back. It's the fact that we have that little bit of time to forget exactly how to do something that causes our brain to have to work much harder to retrieve that information so that it can then work out how to do it again and then move forward from there. The way that we make practice stick is by getting our brain to retrieve information and forcing it to work hard to retrieve things. The best way to do that is to break and give it time to forget. So the problem with cramming is that while students will be feeling like they're making lots and lots of progress, and they may do very well in their exam or their performance, what tends to happen is that as soon as a performance or exam is over, all the gains are lost. And many of us will know this from our own schooling or university days, that we simply, even a month after an exam where we did really, really well, if we crammed, we probably can't remember a whole lot of how that exam went. And if we did it again today, we'd probably fail. A good test for this is to ask yourself, when students have done an exam or an assessment, in about 6 months' time after that, maybe even 12 months, even 3 months for that matter, can they still play the music that they learnt for that assessment? If they can, then there's a good chance that their practice was over a longer period of time and their brains had this chance to retrieve and forget and retrieve and forget and strengthen all those memories. If you're finding that a student, let's say they've finished an exam at the end of 1 year and they come back at the start of the next year and they really cannot play much of that music at all, have a think back to their practice in the lead up to the exam and ask yourself what kind of practice they undertook. Was it the cramming type? Did you see a massive spike in effort in the few weeks beforehand? Or are you surprised? Did they seem to spend time all through the year learning things and they're still finding that they're forgetting them? I'll be very, very surprised if your students, if they are preparing thoroughly over a longer period of time, are finding that they forget things really, really easily. So that's just a little tip about preparation and the cramming effect. I've actually written an article about this. It's called Making Practice Stick. I wrote it for Graham Fitch's great blog on piano practice, and we'll pop a link to that in the show notes if you'd like to read more. It also comes with an infographic, which gives you a one-page quick overview of how this actually looks and allows you to reference it in your teaching. Okay, so we've assessed and we've thought about the first question, which is, what's the best way of assessing my students' progress? And we've talked about some of the options there. But really, at the most fundamental level, we need to ask ourselves an even bigger question. And it's a question that we've talked about on the podcast and I've written about a fair bit in the last 3 months. And that is, why are we teaching? What are we trying to help our student do? Where are we trying to get them? What are their goals? And it's a discussion that we need to have with our students as much as a discussion that we need to have with ourselves. So while you may well, and hopefully you have some very set ideas about what you like to do in your teaching and how to approach things, we also need to have that conversation with our students and their parents to some extent about what their goals are and what they're trying to achieve. What would they like to do? Now, I've got a number of resources about this, so I don't want to go into depth too much because I have talked about it before. You can listen to episode number 69. It was called 6 Steps to Beating Overwhelm. Now, while the topic doesn't sound like it's related to what we're talking about, it absolutely is, because one of the best ways to beat a sense of overwhelming feeling, which is so easy these days in our content-rich world where you're getting lots of emails and lots of ideas in your inbox all the time, one of the best ways of beating that sense of, oh, it's just too much, is to go back to basics and ask yourself what you're trying to achieve and then to find the answers and the solutions and the support to help you achieve those goals. So I would recommend, if you're unsure about how to approach this big question of what are we trying to help our students do, please listen to episode number 69. Also, episode number 78, I talked about 5 tips for planning a piano teaching curriculum. And this was obviously heavily goal-oriented as well. So it could be another one that could be really, really helpful for you. I think the most important thing here is to realize that if we simply start a year with a student by saying, we're going to do an exam or we're going to enter this competition, just because that's what we do in our studio, I want you to really think and ask yourself, why? Why are we doing that? Is it because it's what you feel teachers should get their students to do? Is it because it's how you were taught? Or is it because of a fear, perhaps, that you're unsure of what else you would teach if they didn't do an exam? These are all 100% legitimate reasons why we might be starting a year or a new period of study with a student and just making the assumption that we will do an exam and perhaps not even thinking about the type of exam or the exam board or system and just going in and doing the same things as we've done for the previous few years. So I'd really like to get you to draw a line in the sand and have a think about what you're trying to achieve for your student and what is the best assessment method to get him or her there. So let's say that we're going to choose an exam and we'd like to use that as an assessment for our student. Fantastic. So I've got 4 steps that I want to take you through quickly to help you decide about the exam board and system and the exam type that you might use for your student. Okay, so the first thing to consider is student interest. And this narrows down the field of exam options really, really quickly. So is the student interested in improving their skills as a classical pianist, as more of a contemporary pianist, perhaps as a pop pianist or a jazz musician or jazz pianist? If those choices are made early on, then you'll be able to narrow the list fairly quickly because that will start to define where the exam options are going to be best suited to your students and which exam types are going to suit. So step number 1 in choosing an exam, in my opinion, is to work out what styles of music interests your student. Then we've got to consider those goals. What are we trying to achieve? So, for example, you know, are we trying to make their technique amazing? Then maybe we go down more of a classical exam path. Are we trying to help them improve their improvising and get them to improvise under pressure? Well, maybe there are some contemporary syllabuses that have improv in them. Maybe we'd really like to push them to do sight reading. So we choose an exam that helps them enjoy the music they're playing and has sight reading as one of the supplementary tests. Are they enjoying playing in bands at school? Have they got a little garage band that they really enjoy playing in? And can we give them some skills that assesses them in playing popular music in a band? Well, yes, there definitely are exam options for that style of music. We'll talk about it in just a moment. And as I say, maybe they're just loving classical repertoire. So we'll go down the classical path. So step two is to consider what you're trying to achieve with the assessment that you've chosen. Step number three is to decide whether your student needs an internationally recognized certificate. So some of the exam boards are more international than others. And so if it's important that your student has an internationally recognized qualification, then you might want to choose a board that covers that area. And finally, think about the best way for a student to be tested. So would a recital exam be better for a particular student? So these are exams where the students don't need to demonstrate technical work and they're not going to be asked general knowledge questions. They just go in and perform as they would in a recital. Would that suit your student a little bit better than one where they've got to talk about things with an examiner? And what about the supplementary tests or the marking scheme? Is it helpful for you to have a numerical marking scheme given so you can really see where your students are at? Would that be useful for your student? Well, there will be exams that use a numerical system and others that don't. So that's the step four, I say, in deciding on the exam that you choose, deciding on the best way for your student to be tested. So let's now talk about the main differences between the exams, and they're going to correlate a little bit with the steps that I've just given. So I've categorized the main differences, and look, there are lots of them, but the main differences into five categories. And I'm really excited to let you know that in 2 weeks' time, after this podcast goes live, we're actually giving out we're sharing a blog post, which is an update of my comparison of exam syllabuses. So I created a spreadsheet comparing the main differences between exams about, I think it's probably 4 or 5 years ago, and I haven't updated it since. So as part of this month's focus on exams and recitals, I've got my writer, Sean, and I to work on this. We're going to update that spreadsheet so that you've got a really clear way to have a look at the differences between these exams. And so by going through that process, I've come up with 5 categories that really define the different exams. So the first one is style, the style of music being assessed. And so the main ones are obviously classical, modern, jazz, and pop. And then we've got a whole lot of other piano ones. We've got piano duet, piano accompaniment, two piano, etc. So that's one of the main key differences between the different exams. So that's kind of point one, category one to look out for. One of the next main differences is the number of pieces that are assessed and the number of pieces available on the lists to choose from. So some exams have huge lists of options for students. The AMEB, for example, has some of the biggest lists of pieces that students could choose to present for an exam. And they have a number of pieces. They've got, depending on the exam type, again, between 3 and 6 pieces, depending on level, that students need to prepare to present for an exam. Other boards, I'm thinking about the ABRSM and Trinity College London, have only 3 pieces that students need to present. And in the case of Trinity, one of them can be their own composition. And the 3 pieces are chosen from a relatively limited number of pieces that rotate in their syllabus every couple of years. So the number of pieces is a crucial component and category that defines the different exams, boards, and exam types within them. And I would say that, as you've heard me speak about before, just because an exam board only requires three pieces, doesn't mean, obviously, that we only teach three pieces. I think most of you would be aware that that would be the case now. I think one of the advantages of exams that only require assessment of three pieces is actually that that gives you a whole lot of time in your normal lessons to explore a whole lot of other music, because you're only polishing, in the end, three pieces rather than potentially up to six for some of the other exam boards. And as you get much higher in level, it can be very, very difficult to polish up six pieces while doing, well, much else at all during a year. So definitely consider that. The third category of difference between exam boards is the supplementary tests. These tend to revolve around oral tests of some sort, improvisation, sight reading, and general knowledge. And some boards have variations on those. There are other exam types where the supplementary tests are significantly reduced. So the technical work is reduced and replaced by technical exercises. So short pieces of music that put a technical element into practice in a musical sense. Trinity College London, who I had on the podcast last week, their exams do this, for example. So rather than learning, let's say, 20 scales, you might learn 10 scales. And instead, you'll choose to prepare, I think it's two or three of these technical exercises, and then the examiner could choose to hear one or two of them. I can't remember the exact specifics, but so that's another area of difference between these exams. Category number four of difference is the prerequisites. Some exam boards require students to complete a set level of theory before they're awarded their certificate. And in the case, I think, of the ABRSM, the theory requirements have to be completed before the student actually sits their practical exam. Other boards like the AMEB, you can sit any level of exam, but you won't be awarded your certificate until the theory prerequisite is complete. Trinity College London doesn't have theory prerequisites at all. So have a think about that as well when you're deciding on the exam that's going to suit your student the best. Category number five, and I'm talking here again about the main differences, is the use of own pieces. So either own choice pieces or student compositions. So Piano for Leisure by the AMEB allows students to choose. So out of their three, they require assessment of three pieces. One of those pieces can be an own choice piece at the correct level from any book or board, or it could be a student's own composition. And Trinity College London allows the same thing. So if your student is really interested in composing and you would like to continue their work along the way, and this goes right back to what I said at the beginning about setting goals and working on deciding what you want to encourage students to do, if composition is part of that mix, then you might like to consider an exam that allows a student to be assessed on one of their compositions. And I've put students in for exams with one of their own compositions, and it's been such an exciting thing for the student to do because we can keep working on that side of their skill development, which they're really passionate about, while we continue to work on the technique and the repertoire and the reading and all those things as well. If, for example, a student that's really passionate about composing, if you just say, look, we just can't do that composing work for the next 3 months, 4 months, because we've got to focus on these exam pieces, think about the effect that's going to have on the student. If you can keep them working on things that they enjoy while they're creating an assessment or preparing for an assessment, you've got a winning formula. The last main difference between the exams is the marking scheme. And I mentioned it just before. Some schemes are very, very clear. Every section and every part of the exam is given a numerical number. Other exam boards are a little bit more like a university level qualification where you just get either a high distinction or a pass or a fail for that matter, or you just get a letter grade A, B, C, D. So think about which one might be more suited to one you're teaching and what you would like to learn from the student as they complete their exam, because an exam assessment is obviously very, very useful for students to learn from, but it can be really, really useful as an assessment tool for a teacher too, because you can learn the different parts of your teaching that maybe you can improve upon. So that fifth category of the main differences is the marking scheme. All right, so let's start wrapping up. What I'd like to do is actually go through some of the main types of exams and styles and give you a few tips about some of the exam boards I know who have created content and syllabuses for these different kinds of students. So student number one is probably the easiest. It's the student that is into classical music. Every exam board has classical exams. So really your choice depends on the supplementary tests that you would like, the repertoire choice, and the number of pieces. So talking about supplementary tests, if you'd like the student to develop skills in improv, you could choose a Trinity College London exam because that has improv as one of the supplementary tests up to grade 5. I think ANSCA, the Australian New Zealand Cultural Arts exams in Australia and New Zealand here, I'm pretty sure they have improv as one of the options for supplementary tests as well. If you want them to have a good level of theory while they're studying their classical exams, then you'd probably want to check out the ABRSM or the AMEB, who both have linked levels of theory with their practical exams. What about jazz students? We all have students that love jazz, and unfortunately, many of us are a little bit timid about teaching jazz because, well, it can be challenging, right? If you're not skilled in jazz teaching, jazz can be or is a whole another language. So it's great to know that there are a couple of syllabuses that can help you with students who love jazz. So the ABRSM probably has the most comprehensive jazz syllabus out at the moment. Well worth looking at. It includes the improvisation, great pieces, ways of using backing tracks, following chord symbols and chord charts. It's really great. It's been around for a number of years now. So ABRSM Jazz. ANSCA, who I mentioned before, they are creating a jazz syllabus at the moment in development with Christopher Norton. So I'm really excited to see what comes out of that. But they would be the two that have particularly strong jazz syllabuses. What about students that are into contemporary music? So it might not be pop specifically or pop or rock, but just contemporary piano solos. Well, for that, you've got ANSCA, have they got their modern pianoforte syllabus, and AMEB has their piano for leisure. And I'm sure that some of the exam boards, the other exam boards, have contemporary music options. What about students that like composing? We mentioned just before, Trinity College London and Piano for Leisure by the AMEB both allow the student to present their own composition as one of their three pieces. So that's a great way, as I said, of continuing and encouraging students in that creative aspect while they're going for an exam. Improvising chords and voicings and the kind of pop style music, then what you'd be looking at is Trinity Rock and the Royal College of Music as well. They both have exercises in their technical work for chords and voicings, which is kind of cool. If it's straight pop that you're interested in, then I'd be going for Rock School. AMEB have Rock School, and Trinity College have a rock and pop syllabus as well. Both are fantastic. They're up to date. They challenge the students to learn relevant skills. And we've actually got a post coming out next week about the Rock School exams and how they work. So stay tuned for that one too. And if you're looking for an international recognized board, then probably the two biggest ones are Trinity College London and the ABRSM, who assess students in many, many countries around the world. I've found that on the whole, most exam syllabuses have some recognition in other countries, particularly the main countries of who do exams of UK, Australia, and some of the Asian countries, Singapore, Hong Kong, and those kind of areas. If a student has done an AMEB exam, mostly that there would be some understanding of a relationship there. And certainly at diploma level, most diplomas are recognized internationally, and that's an understood kind of level. And then if you'd like to have students who are interested in duets or piano accompaniment to piano playing, those kinds of things, then definitely check out Trinity College London and ANSCA as well. And apologies if I've forgotten other exam boards. This is not meant to be comprehensive. I'm just giving you some ideas about the places you can go and the things that you can do with students. All right, let's finish with when you've chosen a new exam, what to do if you're trying out a new exam board for the first time. Now, I know this can be a little bit daunting, particularly if you've grown up with an exam system and you are really used to the music in it and how it works and what's expected. Changing and trying out a new exam can be somewhat daunting. So let me just give you a few tips about it. I've done this a couple of times. I've tried a number of exams myself, and it's always been a really positive experience. It really does give you some new perspectives. It spices up your teaching a little bit. And of course, as we've been saying right from the beginning of this podcast, if you can choose an assessment that suits your student, it's going to be 100% more valuable for them than just doing the old thing that you've always done. So try it out. So if you're trying out a new exam board, be honest with parents. Let the parents know that you're trying this for the first time and that you're learning too, and get them on side, get their support, because it might be that you make a couple of errors along the way. You have to change something, or you forgot that they needed to learn a particular arpeggio or something. So just have them on side and make them work with you and want to support you in giving the best learning experience for their child. I can't imagine any parent who wouldn't agree with wanting the best experience for their child. And if that means that you're going to be learning along the way too, then fantastic. Research and explore the music. So download the syllabus. Buy the book at the level that the student is going to be likely working at. Play through the music. Try and do this at least a month before if possible. So learn the pieces. Learn a few of the pieces that you think you would like to teach and that your student, knowing your student, he or she might like to learn. If you have time, you could potentially sit the exam yourself. Now, I know this is really, really difficult because we're all very, very busy people. But if you do have the time, or perhaps if you're a beginner teacher and you would like to have the experience, then going and sitting the exam yourself can be a fantastic way to get a good understanding of how it all works. You'll see what it's like when you go there, how friendly the examiners are, how it all works, the order you do things in, and the whole process. I certainly wouldn't be teaching any exam students if I hadn't sat an exam myself. Start planning early. If you're going to be trying a new exam board for the first time, then make sure that you start planning early. One of the worst ways, of course, to set a student up for an exam is to choose the exam pieces in, say, lesson one, and then try and just learn those however many exam pieces in time for the exam. A much better option, and you can only do this when you plan ahead, is to slowly introduce exam pieces into the repertoire mix over a period of weeks and months, so that as the exam registration date nears, you can decide which of the many pieces that the student already knows can be polished up for the exam. Now, this is the ideal, of course, and I know it's very difficult. I know myself that having students learn 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 or more pieces at an exam level so that come exam time, you can just choose the best three. We all know it's ideal, but it is very, very difficult. So the earlier you can start bringing in some of these exam pieces into their mix of pieces that they're learning, the better chance you have of giving them more options than just the three that they're desperately trying to prepare for the exam in time. And of course, if students are learning 20, 30, even 40 pieces in a year of all different styles and different levels, easier and a bit harder, then you can add in these exam pieces without even telling them that they're exam pieces. It takes the pressure off, it allows them to learn them, and it's a really great way to approach an assessment. Unfortunately, as I say, it takes a lot of planning and thought. So do get ahead if you possibly can. And so if you're in Australia, you might even start thinking about a student that might like to do an exam next year in 2018 and start thinking about how you could start preparing them for it now by just trying out a few of the potential exam pieces. From then on, use the usual rules of preparing students for four performances and assessments. So getting them ready at least 2 to 3 weeks before, starting early on all the supplementary tests. Don't, whatever you do, don't leave oral tests to the week before or 2 weeks before. Make it a regular part of your teaching. Incorporate it and make it relevant to the music that they're learning. Get them to sing intervals and sing melodies and whatever it is, listening while they're learning the music. The supplementary tests are a complete waste of time if you only do it a week before. I encourage students to sit mock exams with other teachers and examiners and get your student to perform their pieces in a concert format at least one, preferably more times before their exam and preferably a week or two out. All right, so I hope that's been a useful breakdown of how to approach student assessment through piano exams. And we're trying to work out the different options for assessment and the best ways to go. I do hope that's been useful. As I mentioned, if you would like some more tips on preparing students for exams, I've got my one-page cheat sheet. It's available at the show notes, which is timtopham.com/episode83. And while I probably haven't given you, you know, the definitive answer today, I haven't answered the question, what's the best piano exam syllabus? But you know the reason why now. It all depends on your student. So keep your student and the goals you have for them front and center in your decision-making around assessments. And if you choose an exam, then remember, there are lots of options out there. And the best way is to decide what you're trying to achieve for your student and then find the exam that suits them the best. All right, guys. So we're right in the middle of exam and recital month. I do hope you've been enjoying the posts. We've had a number on performance anxiety and performances and recitals. As I've mentioned, we've got some information about Rock School coming up. We've also got a fantastic article by an examiner giving us the examiner's perspective on exams too. So lots more coming up this month. If you'd like a transcript of this episode and links to the other things that I've been talking about, then as I say, head to timtopham.com/episode83. You can grab a full transcript and you can also grab that fantastic cheat sheet. All right, until next time, I will see you soon. Enjoy your teaching.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.